Chapter 1. I was defeated. I couldn't go on living any longer. I was tired of what my life had become. I was tired of looking in the mirror and seeing a monster staring back at me. I was tired of not recognizing myself anymore. My eyes were bloodshot, my cheeks were sunken in, and I could see the bones in my rib cage. I had not shaven for days, and I really needed a haircut. I saw the evil in my eyes and felt the demons deep in my heart. I hated the person that I had become. It was a bitter cold day, sometime in January of 2009. I waited for my brother to step into the shower, which was my cue to make a move. I heard him turn the water on, so I crept into his room and stole some cash from his wallet. I had about $100 left from my unemployment check, but a drug addict can never be too greedy. I found $100 in my brother's wallet, so I figured he wouldn't notice if $40 went missing. I snatched two crisp $20 bills, grabbed my jacket, and headed for the door. My first stop was at the liquor store to get a bottle of Bacardi. This was my last drink, and I didn't want to shortchange myself by drinking the cheap stuff. The next stop was North Philly Badlands. A neighborhood known as Kensington was one-stop shopping for all the drugs I could ask for. I parked the car down the street from a well-known drug corner, and a young Spanish dealer shook his head no as I approached him.
5 minutes, papi, the young Spanish dealer said.
Damn, I don't have the patience to wait 5 minutes. I want what I want, and I want it now. I jumped back into the car and drove to another spot.
Dope powder rock, how many, papi?
5 dope and 2 powder.
After a quick hand-to-hand exchange, I was back in my car, tucking the drugs into a small hole in the roof. Now, it was time to get my needles. I approached a busy corner of Kensington and Somerset, a hot spot for needles and a wide variety of other drugs. I told the scruffy addict that I needed a set of works. Works is street slang for syringes. I saw a cop, so I kept walking and remained calm as if nothing was wrong. He passed by me without even looking, so I ran back to the corner to get my works.
I got Zannies and E too, the addict mentioned.
I always heard mixing uppers and downers could make your heart stop. Plus, the ecstasy would make me feel so good. So I copped 4 Xanax and 1 E and then kept it moving. Now I'm off to my final stop. I couldn't have an end-of-the-world party without a little weed. And if I was going to get weed, I might as well go all out and mix it with some good old PCP. I drove to another sketchy corner, got out, and walked to the young dealer.
2 wet and 2 weed, I told him.
He reached inside the window of an abandoned house, more commonly referred to as a bando, and once again, I made the hand-to-hand. I quickly jumped in my car and headed back to Tacony, the small neighborhood in northeast Philadelphia where I grew up. I decided to spend my final moments at Keystone Park. I sat on a bench at the basketball courts, the same basketball courts that my friends and I used to hang out at. But I was all by myself this time. The friends I used to have just didn't know me anymore. Nobody did. Besides, I wanted to be alone. I didn't want anyone to try anything stupid, like save my worthless life. I took a gulp from the bottle of Bacardi and chased it down with my Xanax and ecstasy. Most people would take the pills first, followed by the drink, but I always did everything backward. Maybe that's why I was an addict to begin with. I cracked open the blunt and dumped the tobacco onto the same ground where I used to play basketball. Then I emptied the weed and PCP into the blunt and rolled it up. It looked perfect. I was always good at rolling blunts. It's probably one of the few things I was ever good at. I put the flame to the tip and began smoking. I could finally relax. As the Xanax kicked in, I opened the bottle of Bacardi. I took a swig and emptied the heroin and coke into the cap. That's when I realized I didn't have any water to mix my concoction. With no water to mix my drugs, I asked myself, what would MacGyver do? So I filled the syringe with rum and squirted it into the cap with the coke and dope. I pulled the plunger out of the needle and mixed a shot that would make me sleep forever. By this point, I was pretty fucked up. The ecstasy kicked in and my bottle was half empty, but I knew there was still work to be done. Truth be told, I was excited to see what was waiting for me on the other side. Anything would have been better than the life I was living. I pulled off my belt, wrapped it around my arm, and stuck the needle in my vein. I slowly pulled back the plunger until I saw blood, and injected the deadly mixture in one quick shot. Ah, that's the feeling I was looking for. Now, I just had to wait as I slipped into permanent sedation. An hour had passed, and I was still breathing. I sat on the park bench in confusion. I didn't understand how I was still alive. The uppers, downers, hallucinogens, and everything else should have made my heart explode. That's when I realized I couldn't do anything right, not even kill myself. It was time for Plan B. There were train tracks not far from where I was sitting. I stood up and stumbled my way to the tracks. It was only 50 yards away, but I fell twice before I could get there. I sat in the middle of the tracks and waited for a train to take my life. I heard a loud thunder from up above. When I looked up at the sky, a few cold raindrops smacked me in the face.
"If you really exist, let's see you prove it,"
I shouted to the sky. I didn't know if God was real or not, but that didn't stop me from feeling angry at him. If he loved me, how could he let me suffer like this? I sat there for a while, wondering where the train was. I couldn't wait any longer. I wanted to end my pain and see my mother again. I knew she was in heaven, but wasn't sure if I would end up there or not. No, my bet was I'm going someplace much worse. Still, it was a better alternative to the life I had been living. As I got deep into my thoughts of death and the afterlife, I heard a phone ring from my coat pocket. Who would call at a time like this? I looked at the caller ID and saw it was my ex-girlfriend, Penelope. We had broken up a couple of months earlier. I missed her and still loved her at the time, so I immediately picked up the phone. I was so drunk and high that she could barely understand the words I mumbled. I don't remember the conversation much, but she must have said something that made me change my mind. After I hung up the phone, I wiped the tears from my eyes and got myself up off the ground. As I walked off the tracks, I tripped and banged my knee on the steel rail, but I was so doped up that I barely felt it. I got up and continued to stumble off the tracks. I only made it about 20 yards before the deafening sound of a train whistle pierced my eardrums. I turned around to see a train speeding past at a frightening speed. It could not have been more than 60 seconds since I stepped off the tracks. I was literally 60 seconds away from death. I began to wonder why Penelope called on that particular night. Why at that exact moment? At first, I thought it was just a coincidence. But looking back, I now realize it wasn't. God must have wanted to keep me around for a reason.